Hi guys, hope you're well. Today I wanted to talk a bit about the best-selling book Gangster State by Peter Louis Maybach, called The Gangster State, Unraveling Ace Magashule's Web of Capture. I just got the Kindle version of the book. In UK it's around £11.99, and in South Africa it's around 265 rand for the paperback version that you can find at exclusive books, P&A for example. So what I'm going to do today will be to go through the introduction of the book with you guys. So, if you fancy what actually you're going to listen to today, you should actually, get the book as soon as possible. And so we can start now. Introduction of the Gangster State book. One Friday evening in mid-2013, my cell phone rang just as I was about to put a few takeaway pizzas in my car. I had been working at a Sunday newspaper in Johannesburg, and it was not unusual to get work-related calls over the weekend. Not recognizing the number flashing on my phone's screen, I hesitated. It had been a long week, and I was looking forward to enjoying hot pizza and a few beers with friends. But curious journalists rarely ignore phone calls, so I answered. The person on the other end of the line introduced himself as Ace Magashule, the Premier of the Free State. My first thought was that someone was playing a prank on me, but I soon realized it was indeed him. At the time, I was researching a tender awarded to a Bloemfontein-based company for organizing the annual South African Sport Awards. The company's owner was said to be closely connected to top government leaders and had apparently clinched the contract in an irregular manner. While Magashule and his provincial government did not feature in the story, I may have sent out queries to officials regarding the company's work in the Free State. Magashule had somehow got word of my interest in the contractor and had decided to give me a call. I do not recall verbatim what was said, but he tried to convince me that his administration and the company in question had nothing to hide. The call was strange, to say the least. Top-level government leaders do not normally contact young, relatively unknown journalists, at least not directly. I got the sense that Magashule was worried about what I might uncover. I also think he wanted me to know that he was aware that I was looking into the matter. I later learned that over the years, Magashule contacted other journalists in a similar fashion. To me, this conduct betrayed a degree of nervousness about the media's interest in his province affairs. His apparent habit of contacting reporters also carried a hint of subtle intimidation. At least one Free State journal I spoke to claimed to have abandoned an investigation into a provincial tender after receiving such a call. Magashule had every reason to be worried about nosy journalists. I believe the government deals unpacked in this book, along with previous revelations, sufficiently implicate him as the head of a well-organized state capture network in his home province. Compared to the most prominent tender bandits in national government, however, Magashule's anxiety must have been considerably more manageable during his stint as premier. For a start, Jacob Zuma's time in charge of the country saw government's law enforcement arm become as ineffective as a gangrened limb. There was no need for the likes of Magashule to be concerned about being investigated or brought to book. Media outlets, civil society organizations, and the general public, meanwhile, were largely focused on scandals involving Zuma, his state capture enablers, and rent seeking at national departments and large state-owned companies such as Transnet and Eskom. Public sector looters and their private sector accomplices in provinces like the Free State were left to execute their schemes without drawing too much attention. While there have been great examples of investigative work on Magashule and his administration over the years, such reports have been too sporadic to produce the sustained outreach and pressure necessary to bring about meaningful change. More than a few sources in the Free State's political setup refer to Magashule as Mr. 10%, for allegedly demanding a 10% cut from each government contract in the province. During his 9-year run as premier, the Free State's cumulative annual expenditure totaled over 200 billion rand. While it's unlikely that Mr. 10% skimmed off 20 billion rand, considering what I uncovered while writing this book, I do believe substantial amounts of money ended up in his broader capture network. This includes his family, friends, former business associates, and political allies. Magashule had been extremely careful in his alleged dealings with contractors and other business people. Kickbacks due to him from government contracts would be paid in cash, they all alleged, ensuring that any financial links to dodgy contractors were kept to a minimum. Furthermore, Magashule apparently often used trusted security guards, drivers, and other aides to do his dirty work. He also avoided electronic communication and preferred to discuss funny money and related matters in person. Some of my sources feared that if the Hawks and other law enforcement bodies were to one day wake from their Zuma-induced slumber, they would have a difficult time finding any conclusive evidence of Magashule's involvement in corrupt government deals. But no one can erase that entire past. In April 2018, while I was still working at News 24, I looked into a 255 million rand asbestos audit contract awarded by the Free State Department of Human Settlements. I linked the contract to Aigo Mbambani, a high-flying tender mogul who had been gunned down in Sandton in 2017. I stayed on Mbambani's trail and eventually got hold of a bulky stack of emails, bank records, and related material that detailed some of the murdered businessman's dealings. For ease of reference, I refer to this document as the Aigo files. In order to protect my sources, I cannot divulge and information about how these documents came into my possession. It was my mini Gupta Leaks moment. Although not nearly as large as the data set that laid bare the Gupta family's murky conduct, the Igor files were undoubtedly a valuable find when it came to linking Margashule to possible corruption. Premier requested that you pay full amount of 470,000 rand, reads a snippet of one email in the Igor files. Part 7 fully unpacks the dubious asbestos audit contract and explains how Margashule may have received as much as 10 million rand from the deal. In this book, I examine the undemocratic means with which Margashule and his political allies clung to power in the Free State. I also unpack a fresh revelation about a trip to the former Gupta estate in Johannesburg, allegations of shady meetings with other connected businessmen, and indications that Jacob Zuma may have scored a thank you fee from one of the Free State's failed housing projects. All of these stories should strengthen calls for a proper investigation into Margashule's dealings as Premier. In researching and writing this book, I relied partly on the experiences of an extensive list of individuals who, at varying times during Margashule's political career, moved very close to him. I interviewed about 10 political figures who all once formed part of his inner circle. They were able to provide me with invaluable insights into Margashule's conduct and habits, especially those pertaining to his alleged state capture ploys. Another 10 or so business people and other connected types added to the story. A few politicians from opposition parties were also of great help. Apart from the Igor files, I relied on heaps of tender documents, company records and related material to construct this partial account of what I consider to be Margashule's history as a state captor. I call it a partial account because there is certainly much more to uncover. Margashule's ties to a certain business family from Ferjenechan, for example, do not feature in this book and warrant further exploration. In fact, we might need a separate commission of inquiry to help get to the bottom of the root that infected the Free State government during Margashule's time in charge. Margashule was given a fair opportunity to comment on the issues explored in Gangster State, but he chose not to make use of it. More than 60 questions sent to ANC spokesperson Dakota Lehote for the attention of his boss remained unanswered. In April 2017, I ended my first book, The Republic of Gupta, with a word of caution to the ruling African National Congress that many other observers have also issued. Elect better leaders to your top structures, or risk losing further support in the face of continuing state capture and corruption scandals. Then Nasrec happened. In December 2017, political spectators watched, some with horror, others with bemusement, as at its 54th national conference, the ANC enacted the political equivalent of shooting itself in the foot with an anti-aircraft gun. The election of Ace Magashule and fellow Premier Leaguer David Mabuza as the party's new Secretary General and Deputy President, respectively, ensured that allies of the disgraced Zuma would continue to besmirch the party's name and reputation. The presence in the ANC's top six would also jeopardize President Ramaphosa's so-called New Dawn, meant to revive the party's founding values. Mabuza has since craftily repositioned himself within the ANC's broader power dynamics and has been remarkably quiet. It's Magashule who, in my view, now most prominently embodies the ruling party's glaring departure from the vision for the ANC and South Africa upheld by earlier leaders such as Albert Luthuli, Oliver Tambo and Nelson Mandela. There has been much talk in the past about criminal elements within the ANC. Ironically, Magashule made one such remark in 2012 when service delivery protests in a few Free State towns turned violent. This sentiment became particularly popular when the Gupta's state capture project was exposed. The narrative was that a handful of alleged criminals, Zuma being one of them, had infiltrated an organization that was otherwise still dominated by good, honest people. It was a hopeful notion. Less sympathetic observers call it naive. Whatever the case, it's now obvious that the ANC suffers from a chronic inability to correct past mistakes by dealing with these alleged criminal elements. Zuma's dramatic recall as state president may well have been a result of Ramaphosa's ascent to power, but the latter was bound to encounter resistance from shady characters around every corner if he attempted to navigate the ANC and the country out of the maze of corruption. In a cruel twist, the power of some of these questionable characters was actually bolstered by the internal ANC voting machine that delivered Ramaphosa and the Renewalists their marginal victory. The elevation of Magashule to one of the party's most powerful positions reaffirms the organization's reckless nonchalance with regards to its image and reputation. There are still questions around whether he won the contest to become Secretary General in a fair manner, but the ANC has effectively buried the matter for the sake of unity. It is, however, Magashule's 9 years as Free State Premier that will have even graver implications for the ruling party. At the time, there were enough allegations of misconduct for the ANC to at least consider axing him. Yet, the party chose to look the other way. The fact that Magashule and other high-profile people have managed to escape censure for their alleged crimes for so long leads me to a disturbing conclusion. What we have witnessed since at least 2009 is not the work of mere criminal elements within the ANC, but rather the effect of the outright criminalization of the party as a whole. In this regard, Gangster State is at once a book about Ace Magashule and the political organization to which he belongs. The simple fact of the matter is that Zuma, Magashule and others were able to do so much damage to the ANC and the country because the party failed to stop them. Can all of this still be turned around? I believe so, but by this I mean the country, not the ANC. The ruling party's appointment of its very own secretary gangster to a position as visible and important as the one Magashule now occupies can be seen as a broad endorsement of criminality. If Magashule did indeed steal the position, the ANC's failure to deal with this only further supports more argument. The party's chronic inability to stem the criminalization of its internal leadership structures will one day be viewed as a key reason for the ANC's final implosion. Okay guys, that's the end of the introduction of the book. And yeah, if you have any comments, if you want to share this podcast, you are more than welcome. You can also reach me on Twitter at unique_suffer, and we can take it from there. So yeah, that's the end, and yeah, thank you for listening and have a great day. Cheers.